tweet at TodaySOR.
Tom texts to say, big bonfire every year on the 23rd of June at Ballyrieach, just west of Dingle or Dangany Chúis. Everyone welcome. Lots of old traditions practiced at this bonfire, says Tom. Emer Olsen texts to say, in Denmark, the 23rd of June is Sankt Hans Night and bonfires are lit on all of the beaches. Families and friends get together and they make an effigy of a witch and she's burnt and sent to Bloxburg, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. God knows where that is, but I can guess. Then they sing traditional songs and they toast marshmallows, etc. It's a big night, says Emer. And Aris from Denmark, Texas, listening to the programme as well, telling us a similar story. You're all very welcome listening in Denmark and in other parts of the world and the country. It's time now for our Friday gathering. The panel has assembled around me here. Fergus O'Dowd, Fine Gael TD for Louth. Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin. Brenda Power is a barrister and a columnist with the Sunday Times and the Irish Daily Mail. And we're giving a cub reporter from the Irish Times a chance in the programme as well. That's Michael O'Regan, who's parliamentary correspondent.
I better warn you, Cormac, I have a big following in Dingle.
Well, I have no doubt you do in other parts. But before we delve into the big stories of the week, folks, let's have a listen back to those headline moments from the past few days.
But first, to London, of course, where a man has died and eight are in hospital after a van ploughed into worshippers near a mosque in the north of the city.
We spoke on the way in and I was reminded of that famous scene in Love Actually where Hugh Grant does his dance down the stairs. But apparently it wasn't actually filmed here, so I didn't get a chance to see the stairs.
We have an absolute shared objective, ensuring that we don't see a return to the borders of the past.
Marta Whelan is no Frank Clark, is no Adrian Hardiman, and is no Don LaDonna. Right? And Taoiseach, you strain credibility.
It is not a good thing for this House that this House is now discussing whether or not an individual who is now a judge is competent to hold that office.
One thing in particular that we are looking at is measures to... Hang on a second.
I'm a builder, and we're thinking something that's unique. We're talking about the southern border. Lots of sun, lots of heat. We're thinking about building the wall as a solar wall, so it creates energy and pays for itself. Solar wall panels, beautiful.
Just some of what happened during the week. Lynn Boylan of Sinn Féin. We were talking in the Friday gathering last week about the appointment of Máire Whelan and the controversy it was causing. It's still a controversy now, partly because Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin keep pushing it. Why so? What do you want at this stage?
We want answers that haven't been given. I mean, about the process, why the government didn't follow its own procedures. I mean, from 2002, why did Máire Whelan, if she was interested in the job, not apply through the Judicial Appointments Board, about who knew the three judges that did have an interest? Did Máire Whelan bring that information to the Minister for Justice? Why she didn't excuse herself from the Cabinet? So there's a huge amount of questions that remain to be answered.
Why don't we have those answers, Fergus O'Dowd?
Well, I think it's very clear. We have the answers. The facts are, regardless of what government is in power, the Constitution says that government can actually appoint a judge. That's the first point. So it has to be done by the government. The Judicial Advisory Board may recommend people for the position, any position. They work specifically with new judges. So if there were judges who wished to go for this particular position, they don't go through that other process.
But Máire Whelan wasn't a judge, if she was interested in the position, she should have applied through that process.
I'm trying to explain to you, the process isn't there now. The process isn't there. The JAD is called, doesn't deal with that.
Okay, but even if you had no process whatsoever, starting out with a blank page, is it right that the person who was up for consideration for the job remained in the room when she was being considered?
Well, that's what's been said. I would say this, that I think it was under the Taoiseachship of now Deputy Kenny that all of that happened, and that Leo Varadkar, as the new Taoiseach, has made it exceptionally clear judicial reform legislation is prioritised. This can never happen again.
So does Enda Kenny have questions to answer in this?
Well, I mean, that's a matter for Enda Kenny, but what I'm saying, I'm here as a backbencher.
But has he, he's now a backbencher. Has he ever spoken about
well, ring him up and ask. Well, you should ring him up and ask.
I'm not asking you. Yeah.
Well, I'm not him. I wasn't
there. No, I know
there.
That, but you were at a Fine Gael parliamentary party meeting during the week. Did he explain what happened?
Well, Enda wasn't there this week, but I'm sure he will be there next week.
Did anybody ever ask him during the week?
Can I make the point?
But hang on, that's important, though. Did anybody ever ask? You say it's a question for him. I'm asking you as a colleague of his.
Sure.
Did anybody within Fine Gael, given that this is causing such a furore, ask him?
Well, I think we have expressed our views. I certainly have expressed my views. I would prefer it hadn't happened, obviously, but it did happen. But it happened within the law. It happened according to the Constitution. It happened under due legal process.
So move on, Brendan Powers.
I have to say, I think it isn't illegal, isn't necessarily the best defence of any political manoeuvre. Absolutely. This was a hand grenade lobbed by Enda Kenny as he was going out the door.
Yes.
And I don't see that Leo Varadkar, to be fair to him, had much option but to defend it and to say, all I can do is change procedures in future. And I don't know that this is getting much traction with the public, by the way, because, I mean, as far as most people are concerned, sure, judges are always political appointees anyway.
Hang on, you think that Leo Varadkar had no option whatsoever but to proceed along these lines?
I don't see that he did in the circumstances.
Why? Because Maura Whedon wasn't a judge by the time he came to power. Is that right, Michael O'Regan?
That's true, but politically, Cormac, he'd no choice but to run with it had she stood aside and all that, which I believe she shouldn't, by the way. It would have been a disastrous start. Since time immemorial, every attorney general appointed by any party in government, it's part of the spoils of office. She was a Labour appointee. She was from East Galway, Eamon Gilmore's country. She was active in the Labour Party. They've had the option at the end of their term of Attorney General of going to the bench. There was a lack of transparency, obviously, about the nature of the appointment. But otherwise, she was getting a job handed to others in the past. There is one thing about this, by the way, which is quite sinister, if I may say this. There's a sinister aspect to this. It was recently referred to in an Irish Times editorial, and it was taken up by my colleague Stephen Collins during the week. And this is it. Now, I'm not familiar with the law library, but maybe people out there who are might ring in. Stephen Collins quoted a Fine Gael minister this week in his column in the Irish Times. He said, "Much of the hostility to Maura Whelan comes from a clique of arrogant barristers in the law library who attended posh schools and regard a woman from East Galway as not being their social equal," unquote. Now, Micheál Martin walked into it this week. It was a bad week for Leo Varadkar, a bad week for Micheál Martin. Micheál Martin, representing a party that has good times and bad times in government, but is a party with a radical and egalitarian past, unlike Fine Gael, which is a deeply conservative party.
They would contest it. They'd say that.
I'm sure they would.
Not anymore.
Micheál Martin, aligned himself, it seems, unwittingly, obviously, with a clique, and obviously a small clique in the law library, who are voicing their opposition to Maura Whelan on the basis of begrudgery.
Well, why do you think he walked into it, Micheál Martin?
Because this bizarre new politics, which is a nonsense, means that he's trying to get one over in the government all the time. There's a change in the Dáil now. There's a change in the Dáil dynamics. The row really had nothing to do with Maura Whelan. It's all to do with Leo Varadkar, young guy, once a long stretch as Taoiseach and Fine Gael leader. Enda Kenny, we all knew, was not going to finish his term as Taoiseach. You have now Leo Varadkar, more formidable politically in the sense that he's new and young. You will, I think, in time, Lynn will confirm this, probably in the autumn, have Mary Lou MacDonald leading Sinn Féin. There'll be a change in the structure. During the last general election, one of the reasons Micheál Martin did so well in the last general election as a party leader was that both Gerry Adams and Enda Kenny performed poorly in debates as party leaders.
But you say it's different now. And that throws up a very different conundrum, doesn't it, Fergus O'Dowd of Fine Gael? Because Leo Varadkar is on record in saying quite recently now, in the last few months as well, that he simply doesn't trust Fianna Fáil. He didn't trust Fianna Fáil, nor did Fine Gael when Charlie Haughey was in power. And he doesn't trust Fianna Fáil when Micheál Martin is in power. Are we talking about an election then within weeks or months even?
No, I don't think so. I think what Leo actually said yesterday was that he wanted to reassure and ensure that the agreement, the supply agreement, continues and that he will take steps, whatever steps, including the issue in relation to Mental Health Commission or a committee to deal with those issues and to take on board a lot more of what Fianna Fáil are saying. And I think we should do that. It's appropriate and
proper if we can agree on policy issues.
But hang on, in his first week as Taoiseach, as leader of Fine Gael, we've had leaders' questions and we've had various episodes where he and Micheál Martin have almost spontaneously combusted.
Well, that was last week, I think. Look to next week. I mean, these things happen. There's a new man in the job. You have two captains of a competing football team.
There was never any trust.
You always have a Bardy in the first round.
This is an answer. There was never any trust in this relationship. This was political opportunism by two parties. Fine Gael wanted to get back into power. Fianna Fáil thought that by keeping them power for a while, then pulling the plug at an appropriate time would be best for them. So you have now a bizarre situation where Leo Varadkar was talking apparently the other day about healing the breach. I take that with a pinch of salt. Talking about setting up a Dáil committee on mental health.
I think that's a Fianna Fáil actual demand.
Yes.
Such, and it's important that it's
another Dáil committee, Fergus. Well, how many have we now? 5,000?
Well, I don't know.
How many reviews have we?
Well, I think the point is that it's a key issue with everybody, and Fianna Fáil are right to push
The
that.
Mental health services, by the way, individual TDs will tell you from their clinics that the mental health service are in a shambles.
They are, absolutely.
You don't need another time-wasting Dáil committee. You need government action.
Well, as outlined on this programme, without doubt, how long do you think, Brenda Power, can this relationship between Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar last?
I don't know, but I have to say, when I was listening to the radio this morning and it mentioned that Fianna Fáil is apparently preparing to step up to an election... I'm reminded of the standoff between sort of North Korea and the Americans. Fianna Fáil has fired a test missile into the Sea of Japan. It's the political version of mutually assured destruction. I think you don't have to like each other to see that there is a benefit in preserving the status quo. And I think both sides, whatever hostility there is between them, and there does seem to be a bit of needle there last week over that, particularly over the phone call on Sunday night when Micheál Martin, apparently that was the first he heard of the fact that the appointment of Maura Whelan was being forced through the next morning and phoned Leo Varadkar. And then Leo Varadkar said, well, you promised me you weren't going to go there and raise issues of competence and so on. I still think that they will both step back.
In terms of ballistics, Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin has fired a few missiles of your own in the Dáil this week. I don't know why you're smiling, but you say that this relationship is past its sell-by date and you're uncomfortable in Sinn Féin with phone calls on a Sunday night between the Taoiseach and the leader of Fianna Fáil.
Yeah, we don't think that Leo Varadkar has a mandate to lead now, and this form of stroke politics, and that's what it was, stroke politics. And in fairness to Leo, he put it up to Fianna Fáil by rushing to the Auras before he headed off to London. And by doing that, yes, he put it up to them and more or less saying, are you going to pull the plug or not? But what he also did was he involved himself in the dispute. So what Fergus is saying, this was Enda Kenny. Leo, as his trademark now, his fingerprints are over it because he fast-tracked it by going into the Auras. These procedures usually take weeks. It happened in a matter
that's
of
not,
days
that
Moira Whelan is now a judge.
The fact is that Leo wasn't involved. He wasn't a Taoiseach and he wasn't a Minister for Justice. He didn't see the note for the government.
Okay, but look, he was involved this week, and we'll move on to another topic. He was involved in announcing the Ministers of State, and he was criticised on this programme and on others, Brenda Power, for the dearth of women, the paucity, the number of women in the lineup. Only 7, I think, out of 34 nominations in its entirety from Leo Varadkar. Is that a fair criticism?
It is fair. I think it's shameful to have so few women, frankly. And according to Marcel Corcoran,
Kennedy.
The reason she was given for her demotion was, I have to promote my friends. So, I mean, if he said, look, I'm promoting women simply because they're women, I don't really care about their talent or their merit, he would quite rightly be excoriated. But it's okay to say, I'm promoting my cronies. And we're cool with cronyism. I think that is unacceptable. And I actually agree with Mary Mitchell O'Connor, who spoke out last night and said, look, success doesn't necessarily just come in a pinstripe suit. While I did not agree with her citing sexism to defend herself against what sounded to me like reasonably legitimate criticisms of her pre-budget submissions.
Why not
last
cite
year.
Sexism?
Cormac, the way you counter that argument is prove that it is sexism by saying, look, here's what I did, here's what I've done, here's why this criticism is unfair.
But
then
she,
you don't
she
have
has
to.
Said, I
she
stand
ran
on my
to
record,
sexism
Jesus.
First. She kind of reached, as Arlene Foster did as well over the Ash for Cash scandal. I think, but I agree with Mary Mitchell O'Connor. I'm sure there was an element of sexism involved, an element of misogyny, and I think it is right to say that women do have to be better than men. So the very least you've got to do is be as good. And on that occasion, the one that was mentioned in that kind of underhand Irish Times account of criticism of her did seem to be well founded, though, in that she was reading her pre-budget submissions from her phone
Michael
when others came in.
Michael
very
doesn't
well.
Like your
description.
Well,
it was
good analytical journalism. I would ask one question about Mary Mitchell O'Connor and her outburst yesterday, which she's entitled to make. Would she have made it had she been retained in the cabinet?
She might have. If she was the only woman retained.
But she is in the cabinet.
She's a super junior.
No, I know that, but as a senior minister.
She is in the cabinet.
Look, let's get real about this. Fergus knows this. Yeah. And I admire Brenda's idealism. Every Taoiseach, every party leader, every Taoiseach basically appoints the people who have supported him. And it's been a him so far, all things being equal. Fergus was thrown under a bus as a junior minister by Enda Kenny because he had backed Richard Bruton. A very good junior minister, I have to say, probably the most effective in the Dáil at the time. So, and others. Look, the reason that Mary Mitchell O'Connor and Dara Murphy were dropped is they had backed Simon Coveney.
So were you, I wonder, Fergus, O'Dowd, were you upset that you didn't get the call this time?
Well, in fairness, Leo rang me on the morning and we had a good chat and I rang him back a second time. And obviously very disappointed, but I accept the fact that everybody couldn't be in it, but I was particularly disappointed. Can I just make the point from my own constituency, a border constituency, biggest towns in Ireland, no local government reform, no hope of sitting at the cabinet table to get it right. But the first thing Leo did was, yes, he's visiting Drogheda, yes, he's visiting Louth, and I have a succession of ministers now lined up to get the changes that we need locally, and I welcome that. The fact is, everybody can't sit at the table. I'm disappointed that I don't now, but I do know that they are listening to everything I'm saying, and as I said at the party meeting, I will hold all the ministers accountable in my party rooms for what they do, or particularly for what they don't do. But let me get back to the point about the Fine Gael and the gender issue. The fact is that 30% of candidates was our legislation for the first time to increase the number of that parties wouldn't be funded unless 30% of the candidates were female. The legislation also says that at the next election, it must be 40%. The other point is that Fine Gael we were lucky to get 11 of our successful TDs are female. 55% of them are ministers. So we have a very high proportion. Not enough, and I accept and acknowledge what you're saying. So it's wrong. Can I make the point? The word misogyny is one I absolutely reject, and I think it's unfair and it's wrong to use in the context of.
But let me put it to Lynn Boylan. Even if there was a Sinn Féin-led government, you wouldn't do much better based on your own numbers.
We've got a very good record if you look at the amount of female elected representatives we have, and now our leader in the north of the Stormont Assembly is a young woman as well.
So how much
we've a very, very good record. And in fact, we've had a 50-50 gender breakdown on our Ord Cóirle for years because we've seen the importance of having gender parity. But the issue here is Varadkar has modelled himself on this Macron Trudeau type character, and that's what he's pushing out there. And then when it comes down, when push comes to shove, he falls at the first hurdle.
Our Taoiseach is a female. But that's the second highest office in the land. 50% of our MEPs are female. Our leader in the
Maraid McGuinness is the first senior vice president
of the EPP party, and she has everybody's support in that. We have more Fine Gael female percentage of councillors is higher than any other party. So we very much pro-female, pro-empowerment, pro-change in this matter.
Okay.
And I reject the points that are made. Absolutely.
But Marcella Corcoran Kennedy, if you want to talk about merit, in fairness to her, was actually doing a very, very good job.
She was doing an excellent job.
And particularly
given
that Varadkar was a former minister for health and he knows the issues we have in this country around alcohol. Marcella Corcoran Kennedy was coming under immense pressure from the vintners lobbying, and she stood up to it, and in fairness was bringing forward the alcohol bill.
Can I move on and bring two more very important women into the conversation? That is Theresa May and Arlene Foster. The talks, Lynn, between the DUP and the Tories, €2 billion for the North being talked about, though Geoffrey Donaldson dismisses that figure. Surely it's great if the DUP manages to get that amount of investment for Northern Ireland.
Well, if they can get investment for the North, it would be welcome, so long as the investment then is evenly spread across the area and that everybody in the North would benefit from it. I don't believe they will, because I think you have a large Conservative bloc now from Scotland that'll be saying, well, if they're getting it, we want it for our region. You'll have Conservative MPs in Wales saying the same. And, I mean, England have fought back against austerity in this election and be saying you're giving it to these 10 DUP. So I don't think they're going to get what they're looking for. without a doubt.
Sure, even if they get $1.5 billion, isn't that fantastic?
I don't think they'll even get that. I don't think they're going to get a huge amount from the deal. What they will get probably concessions on, which is deeply concerning, is around this military covenant around protecting former soldiers from prosecution. So things like that that are important to the DUP hardline supporters, but that won't benefit.
Does it put Sinn Féin in a precarious or volatile position when negotiating with the DUP for Stormont and the executive and so on, that the DUP, the other branch of the DUP, the same party, is negotiating with the kingmakers in London, really?
Well, I think what you're seeing is they're not taking the negotiations in the North seriously at the moment, because they're definitely keeping the eye on Westminster, going, we get a deal here and then there's less need for us to go back into Stormont. We're ready to negotiate. We're ready to do a deal by Tuesday on the issues that we've already agreed under the Good Friday Agreement.
Is it putting Sinn Féin in a very difficult position, I wonder, Brenda Power?
How do you mean?
This matrix of negotiation I'm talking about, that the DUP is talking to the Tories, yes, and that they're talking to Sinn Féin. And as Arlene Foster has put it, you can sort this out, she says, by re-entering the executive, or you can leave that.
No, she can sort it out.
And she said the choice is leave it and we'll sort it from London.
Which they can't do. Under the Andrews Agreement, they can't have direct.
But there has been a softening, Lynn, of Sinn Féin's stance on the demand that she step aside, that Arlene Foster to step aside, and in return for that then there's the concessions on the Irish language. So I think that, you know, I do see evidence of movement on both sides and reasons to be optimistic there. But I have to say, Cormac, I wouldn't be convinced that the deal with the DUP is done and dusted or is guaranteed. There are banana skins along the way that Theresa May never anticipated. For instance, that letter Arlene Foster wrote to the Scottish authorities asking that they not recognise civil unions in the North as same-sex marriages. I mean, that is not going to play well with Theresa May's constituency, and I can't see how there won't be more of that. That got escaped under the radar last week, that particular letter. Arlene Foster said, I did not write any such letter, it definitely didn't come from me, and then it was produced
and
signed.
But realpolitik, Michael O'Regan, because Theresa May needs the DUP, so she's willing to overlook a lot, I'd say.
I think she will. I think a deal will be done because it's a chance for the DUP to exercise some power in London. I think the DUP were responsible for the collapse of the executive in the North, and I think Arlene Foster has to take a lot of personal responsibility.
Wasn't it Sinn Féin that actually collapsed?
But I think the late Martin McGuinness did as much as he could, actually, until he had no option but to collapse it.
But the way the DUP look at this, they say you cannot dictate to the DUP who you have as First Minister, isn't
it? No, I know that, but what they wanted, all they wanted were her to stand aside until this controversy was resolved. Also, by
no
the way,
small thing, Michael.
I agree, Cormac, but the petty response from the DUP in relation to an issue like the Irish language, for instance, a modest amount of funding. 50, however, yeah. I think that this arrangement in London is going to make it very difficult to work the executive in the North if you have two parties, one of keeping up Theresa May in power, a dreadful Conservative Party now with a hopeless leader, a fool like Boris Johnson who thinks he could replace her. It's impossible to see how it's going to work.
Isn't it a disaster as we face into Brexit negotiations, Fergus O'Dowd, that you have a minority government here and the party propping them up, there's no trust between them, and you have a minority arrangement in London as well and no executive in the North. It's a disaster, isn't it?
But I would say that the Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil relationship will actually improve, and I've no doubt about that. And on the issues of the North, on the issues of Brexit, we are at idem on those issues. The point I would make in response to Sinn Féin, their concerns about Scottish MPs and Welsh MPs and the rest, is they are mute and silent in Westminster. They take not their seats, and therefore there's no nationalist voice. They have had the confidence of the nationalist community in the North. They did not and will not take their seats. So if it meant that there could be a change in Brexit, if it meant it could be more money for Northern Ireland, if it meant you get a better deal for poorer people, Sinn Féin are absent in that vote when the opportunity could be there to use their leverage.
Fine Gael doesn't see a problem with going back on an electoral mandate.
This is a key point. If there's she's 10 short, right? And obviously people will get sick and will not be there. So it's a very precarious parliament. Nationalist voice is zero there. That's the problem. So you can complain all you want.
I'm not complaining. I'm saying that the nationalist community,
you're not speaking where you can be listened to.
If you were following the election in the North, anybody who paid any attention to the election in the North would have known that that was the key platform that was used to fight against Sinn Féin. So the SDLP were using it, the DUP were using it, everyone was using that against us. We have now gone back with a stronger mandate than ever. The nationalist community in the north have said they do not want to have a voice in Westminster. What they want is a voice in Stormont.
But Lynn, if anybody that comes to North is coming through the DUP, that policy of abstentionism is actually harming Ireland in the end, would you not look to change it?
But I don't believe it's harming Ireland in the end, and I believe it would be a short term opportunism for Sinn Féin to just
Hang on, Michael.
The Pat Roberts school of politics where that's what you do in elections.
But the point is you're not using your responsibility. If you believe
we're
in getting rid of a Tory government, well, do it.
We're fighting for the issues of Brexit, both in the European Parliament with the four MEPs, four Sinn Féin MEPs, who immediately met with the other Irish MEPs and have fought very hard to ensure that the North was referenced in the resolution. We're fighting very hard in the Dáil for it. What we need is Simon Coveney now to shine as the new Minister for Foreign Affairs and to step up to the plate and play hardball with the British government on Stormont.
Can I move on now to the Public Accounts Committee questioning of the Garda Commissioner Noreen O'Sullivan, which happened during the week as well. Over 7 hours, Michael O'Regan, she answered questions. She left him very, very frustrated indeed. Are we any clearer as to what happened in terms of financial irregularity at the Garda College?
No, we're not. And obviously there's a process of investigation. I do take her point that it's too early to be naming people in the sense that everybody's entitled to due process. But what's coming out is quite astonishing. This alleged diversion of EU funds to an account that existed for years. And also, of course, if you'd call it the supervisory role of the Department of Justice will now come under scrutiny as well. This is quite shocking, but it will take time for it all to emerge.
One thing that was shocking from the proceedings during the week, Brenda Power, is that 8 times she was asked, do you have confidence in senior management?
And each time she came up with a staggeringly inventive way of saying no. And not saying anything. If you look at that, one of the papers, I think it was the Mail, actually transcribed it. And each time she found a way of just not answering. You know, and I think it was left in Alan Kelly in the end saying, OK, you know, that's the 8th time I've asked you.
I know,
and
but what if she doesn't? What does she do? Let's say you're the Garda Commissioner and you're asked that. And you actually, in your heart of hearts, you don't have confidence. What do you do in that situation?
I really did think, like a lot of women, particularly when Noreen O'Sullivan was appointed, that maybe we will actually see the new broom that women have often said their leadership would offer. And it is kind of dispiriting to see that she feels herself trapped. She clearly doesn't have the confidence and doesn't feel she can say it.
I wonder, is the questioning of Noreen O'Sullivan, Lynn Boylan, and is the political atmosphere and theatre involved and the grandstanding, as some commentators have said in relation to this question in the Dáil, is that hampering her efforts to change the culture and change operations within An Garda Síochána in an unfair way at this stage?
No, I mean, Noreen O'Sullivan came up through the system. So she's effectively part of the system that is the problem within the Garda Síochána. But for me, the most explosive part that came out of the committee hearings this week was the fact that the letter that was wrote by Noreen O'Sullivan to the Comptroller and Auditor General effectively saying that there were no issues around Garda accounts, despite the fact that before she wrote that letter, I think it was 4 days before, she had been informed of the issues. She had been advised by her legal consultant that she needed to inform the Minister for Justice, the Department for Justice and the Comptroller Editor. So not only did she not inform them and ignore the legal advice, she effectively wrote a letter saying there was nothing going on. And I think that's explosive.
And today I think John Barrett, is that his name? Yeah. The civilian HR head has called on her, has written to her publicly and called on her to amend the record to admit that she did actually know that.
But what's come to the fore again, Fergus O'Dowd, is that if you look at the Dáil and pronouncements from Labour, Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil, it seems that a majority of elected representatives at this stage do not have confidence in the Garda Commissioner, and only a minority of the Dáil, i.e. Fine Gael TDs, are keeping her in power. Is that democratic?
Well, I think what is democratic is that, first of all, is that the Garda Commissioner wasn't appointed by the politicians. She was appointed independently in international competition. She was judged to be the most qualified and the best candidate for the job. Secondly, the issue you're talking about in relation to the internal Garda audit, that's very, very clear. There are serious issues there. It's very serious. There's a criminal investigation into alleged fraud or potential fraud. by GSOC, and also the European Court of Auditors are now alerted to the issues, and they may very well carry out a root and branch audit as well. So the issues here are they're even bigger than, you know, I'm shocked and appalled at what is alleged. The point is the criminal case or the criminal investigation will have to take priority, and I think until that is finished, and let it be, obviously it has to be due process, and obviously the PAC report will come out. All of the other issues are very important.
Are you frustrated by the timing of the referral from Noreen O'Sullivan from the Gore, to GSOC, which was the day before she was questioned by PAC?
I wasn't at the PAC meeting, but all of those issues are germane to the investigation, and obviously PAC will comment on that, and it is led by a member of the opposition, and rightly so, and there'll be transparency about what the Dáil members think of that. The other point then is that we're also going to head into the inquiry into the McCabe issues, and it is a very difficult time for the whole country. People want change in the Gardaí, I've no doubt about that, to answer your direct question, and I believe there should be change at the top in the Gardaí.
And will current management and leadership bring that change?
Well, I mean, I think that we wait till we see these issues are brought to fruition.
Why wait? It's urgent, though.
Well, the point is you have to have due process, which we spoke about, and at the end of that process, I would like to see that change.
How long will that take?
Well, obviously, due process takes time, but I think it's going to be very difficult for the Gardaí and for the public, and particularly the ordinary Gardaí who go out every day, risk their lives to protect us all.
Okay, will it be less stormy seas next Friday when the gathering comes together, I wonder? Between Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin.
It'll just look that way. Yeah. By the way, we should wish Fergus every success with the support group who now meet in the Dáil, the people who didn't become ministers, people like Pat Deering, Alan Farrell, Martin Hayden, John Deasy.
I'm not going to give you a platform to mock them live on air. You can do it in the Irish.
They're good friends of mine. Along with Leo Varadkar and all those who were successful.
Auda, Fergus O'Dowd, Lynn Boylan, Brenda Power, and Michael O'Regan. Thank you very much indeed.